What's going on, people? Welcome to Paint Points. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting. This podcast is proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network and the Canis Hoopers family. Well, we almost got through an entire off-season, almost, without making headlines and without being the team thrust solely in the sights of the media in a bad way. But what is it, six days before media day and training camp, the Timberwolves are back in the spotlight and not in a good way. Obviously, if you're listening to this, I'm sure you've heard that Gerson Rosas was relieved of his duties on Wednesday. Pretty messy situation, a lot to work through. Sachin Gupta takes over as the president of basketball operations. Just kind of turmoil throughout the organization. Carl Anthony Towns is tweeting about it. It's everywhere, all over the media. So to dive into a few things surrounding that subject is Jack Borman, Canis Hoopers contributor, friend of the show. Jack, what's going on, man?
Oh man, it was crazy, crazy day yesterday. I tweeted this out yesterday, but I was down at Mayo Clinic Square, where the Timberwolves practice, where all the Timberwolves offices are. I was down there for Lynx practice yesterday. Was standing right next to Cheryl Reeve, doing media availability with her and Kent Youngblood of the Star Tribune and Jace Frederick of the Pioneer Press. When the news broke and you want to talk about weird vibes, like the vibes were weird down there. And it was a surreal day. And, kind of knowing some of what had, happened, I guess, before all of it got reported was just a weird feeling. And, I think Dane said this on his podcast that he just didn't envy, the job of people who had to dig for more information. And, I completely echo that. Even for him, like the position that he's in, I'm sure, wasn't fun. And same goes for Britt and Jace and Chris and, Chris Long, Doogie Wolfson, all the people that go into, cover the team, in various capacities was just crazy. Really, really just unfortunate situation, but, hopefully, if the reports are that he was probably going to be fired at some point anyways, hopefully it's good in the sense that, the Timberwolves can kind of start to turn a new leaf and that you kind of get rid of, some of the toxicity in the franchise and you can kind of start towards kind of building towards a better tomorrow. As soon as possible with a guy who by all accounts is a phenomenal human being in Sachin Gupta and a guy who is making history in all of this, which cannot go forgotten. He is the first person of Indian descent to run an NBA franchise, which is a massive deal. And something that I really hope does not get lost in the just selfishness and just general jackassness that took place, on Saturday and reportedly even before that. I'm personally, just still trying to catch my breath from everything that happened yesterday. Mm-hmm. Wednesday here in the United States. Hopefully media day and training camp next week will give us some more, basketball things to talk about. And I'm just really fucking excited to see Anthony Edwards, content back on Timberwolves social feeds and seeing videos of him and Malik Beasley and Pat Bev and goofing around and just playing hoops. I'm excited. So overall, tough day yesterday, but in the long run, I do think that the moves that were made yesterday were for the best.
Yeah, I think there's going to be some all-time media day quotes from Anthony Edwards when he's asked about the situation. Either just complete nonchalance.
Did you see his Instagram story? Like, there was somebody that tweeted it was like, dog. Yeah, it was like the entire Timberwolves franchise is imploding. Meanwhile, Anthony Edwards, that's like a video of his dog like falling off his couch. Like, just like, oh, it's perfect, man. I just like, I hope that they wrap that dude in like emotional, social, physical bubble wrap and that he's just like this forever. Cause man, he just brightens everybody's day, no matter who you are or what you do.
I think he is kind of like an embodiment of how much, like, of what this team needs to be in terms of on-court, you know, production and from an on-court standpoint. Like, this, I don't want to say this doesn't matter because, like, clearly it does. That would be the understatement of the century. But, like, from an on-court perspective, I don't really think anything's changed. And if anything has changed, it's for the better because, like, there's never a good time to you know, clear the skeletons from your closet. There's never a good time to wipe away the toxicity that clearly has been bubbling underneath the surface for months now, or, you know, maybe even longer. And, like, whether it was 5 days before training camp, whether it was 5 days before the draft, whether it's midway through the season, like, no matter what, it's dysfunctional. That's going to be painted as dysfunctional because that's what it is. And it's, there's never a good time in the NBA year to get rid of your lead executive, especially after, what, 2 and a bit years of being in charge, which is remarkably short for an executive, even, you know, there's been really bad executives that have lasted 5 years. Like, but from an on-court standpoint, is there anything you, like, do you think this is different at all? Like, do you think this matters when preseason starts and when training camp starts? Like, does this change at all to you?
No, I don't think it changes much, you know, in the interim. You know, Chris Finch is still going to coach the team. Dane Moore reported yesterday that, you know, that Chris Finch has fans at every level of the organization and that his job is extremely safe and that there are no plans to, you know, to remove him as head coach, which is great because Chris Finch has been unbelievable, in his time. I mean, you know, when Kat, Ant, and D'Lo played here, together the second half of the season, they had the best offensive rating in the NBA. That includes being better than the all-time record that the Nets set over the course of the entire regular season. They had a top five net rating. And a lot of that has to do with Chris Finch and the way that he kind of, you know, played his hand. You know, he was dealt the same deck of cards that, you know, that Ryan Saunders was at the very start of the year, at least. Obviously, you know, Saunders had a bunch of injuries here and there, but like Finch also didn't have, you know, D'Angelo Russell for a good chunk of his time and didn't have Malik Beasley really at all. So when you think about it in that way, you know, especially with Ant, what he was able to get done with Ant was spectacular. And so, you know, the only thing that I can think of how the on-court basketball might change now that Rosas is gone is that, you know, we knew that Rosas had a lot of mandates for Ryan Saunders. You know, to play really, really fast, that Rosas was addicted to pace and, you know, and shooting more threes and that type of thing. And, you know, I don't know what type of, you know, I think Chris Finch called them bumpers that they'd put on players, or, you know, styles of play that they wanted guys to have or positions on the floor they wanted guys to play. Like, I don't know what type of, I don't know what type of mandates he had on Finch, just given that he had a much closer relationship with Finch, you know, and longer history with him than Saunders. So that's really the only thing I can think of. But yeah, I mean, you know, hopefully we get more of that best offensive rating and really, really strong net rating as well. You know, once the season gets rolling here and Jesus, what is it? 4 weeks, 3 weeks. So
preseason is in 10 days, I think. The 4th of October is the first preseason game.
Yeah,
it's come around so quick, man.
It's tough. I mean, I'm going to be out of town from October 1st through October 8th. So I'm going to miss a decent chunk of the preseason, which will be interesting. But, man, it is, it's crazy how fast we're already here. So,
yeah, it's, and it's just nice to, I think it's a good distraction from all of this, because if this was the story that had to bubble over and dominate the headlines for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks, you know, longer, maybe 2, 3 months, if this was at the start of the off season, I think it would just be awful. Like, I think a good distraction from this will be able to see the team get out there. I think, you know, Pat Bev and Taurean Prince are all, you know, very good additions to a team that had been looking pretty good, like you said. Like, they definitely took major leaps in the final part of the season. What does Gupta do for this team? Like, do you think there's a mold there that you believe he's going to slot into, or is it just a wait and see, I guess, with him?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been around a lot of really, really smart and innovative thinkers in his time in the NBA. People that have been disruptive in a good way. You know, I think Hinkie really introduced the idea of tanking and the value that, you know, trying to really find guys on the margins, even when you know you're not going to be great, that you can sign at value, you know, contracts for long term, so that if, you know, some of these guys you do tank for end up, you know, working out, that that you have some of those complementary pieces in place on team friendly deals. You know, that's something that you can look at with Hinkie. And then you know, and with Hinkie too, like, I feel like they had a ton of draft picks. You know, that was something that was a big thing. And so, you know, when you combine that with Gupta's mind, you know, he has a computer science degree from MIT. He has an MBA from Stanford Business School. He's worked for Daryl Morey in Houston, and wrote the code for the trade machine and kind of played a similar role, you know, under Sam Hinkie as EVP of B-ball ops there. So, I mean, he's been in that type of seat now for like 4 or 5 years. And so he obviously has seen, you know, he's seen four different guys do it, including Rosas. And I think that he knows kind of exactly what the job requires, what it takes in the type of, you know, preparation and leadership and just the work that goes into it, and how you can rely on all the people in your front office to do those tasks, and kind of, you know, work together in a complementary and harmonious way to achieve whatever goals you may have. And the vibe that we got from the reporting from John, was that Rosas would go rogue, and that Rosas would shut out some people who, you know, in a vacuum, opinions really matter, or, you know, work had been crucial to getting that thing near the finish line, and whose voices, you know, should definitely have a seat at the table and definitely have a vote in the overall say of what happens and what the front office does.
Well, there's just no point. There's no point having these guys there if their input is completely ignored.
Yeah, and
I get that Rosas is going to make the decisions. Like, that's his job, is to factor in all of these opinions and to make the decisions. And sometimes every front office, the lead executive is going to override the consensus of the rest of the front office, because at the end of the day, that's their job. And I think that he did that for the Russell trade. I think, especially with what's being reported with the pick protections. But it gets to a point where if you're making all these guys do this work and you're hiring guys with great reputations like Gupta and Joe Branch and Gianluca Pastucci, like, if all these guys have really great reputations around the league, they come with high regard. If you're not going to listen to them, if you, like you said, go rogue and kind of just stick to this dogmatic approach to what's in your head, like Rosas is clearly doing, it just starts to, like, nothing starts to make sense with his leadership. And seems like that was the way it was going. And I think it's a good thing that Gupta, it's not a good thing, but it's a good thing that he, I guess, lived through that. And like you said, he's been through diverse front offices, but I think that he was able to watch the demise of Rosas and I guess note down what works and what doesn't work and why it doesn't work. And he seemed to be the main guy that clashed with the idea that it has to be so dogmatic and so, you know, straight from Rosas way or the highway. I think that really works in his favor, because now he comes in with the view that he needs to be different to that, and he needs to get this front office working together and really get the connection from the top of the organization all the way down to the guys on the court and the guys, you know, giving guys towels on the bench. Like, I think we won't know because we all thought that Rosas was that guy 2 years ago, 1 year ago, 6 months ago, we thought he was that guy. Like, but not everyone is an asshole and you know, borderline kind of monstrous executive. Like, but I think that the Gupta having that experience and knowing what didn't work will probably help him implement what does work in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think too, it's important that, like, he already understands how all of these guys work. And he understands how they all fit together. I think, like, if Gupta was handed this job and he created his own front office, like, yeah, he may have good relationships with all the guys that he brings in, like, you know, but at the same time, like, he may not understand, like, how does this guy work with, you know, work with this woman, or how does this guy work with this guy, or this woman work with this woman? Like, you know what I mean? And so being able to understand those relationships and the dynamic between not just him and the people who are now working for him, but also how those people interact with each other, and saying, like, okay, person A would work well with D, and B has a really, really good relationship with C. So, like, we can have them, you know, tag team this, or this guy has a background here, or this woman has a background here. You know what I mean? And I think that that's important and could be really, you know, beneficial in hitting the ground running. And you know, I haven't heard a bad word about Sachin Gupta in the entire time that he's been here, from anybody, you know, that has talked to people that would then relay that information on to me. I have not heard a bad word about him. And I think that matters, man. You know, I can't say the same about Rosas. You know, even like earlier on, I can't say the same about Rosas. And in reality, like, when you have guys like Gupta and Finch who are just really nice, down-to-earth guys who just understand how to treat other people and understand also the basketball element of this thing, which is, you know, obviously paramount. You know, I think that at the very least, like, maintaining status quo of not just being a dumpster fire is a completely fair expectation, and frankly, as low as the bar should be. Because I know that, you know, given both of their backgrounds and what we've already seen from each of them in their time here, that, you know, they know what they're doing. And when you have people in place that know what they're doing, I think that more often than not yields fruitful situations. And, I guess that, you know, we'll see if it bears fruit. But yeah, I mean, I said this on Twitter yesterday. I work full time in data analytics and marketing. And so, given that background that Gupta has, I'm really excited to see how, you know, analytics may influence, the way that the Timberwolves play. Because, you know, I think that as more numbers come out, like, Rosas was all about pace, right? And I think Stan Van Gundy might have tweeted this yesterday, 2 days ago, that like more than half of the top, like, seven teams and almost all the top five teams were bottom of the, like, bottom half of the league in pace. And some of them are like bottom seven in the league in pace, and we're still incredibly efficient. And so, you know, I'd be surprised if, I wouldn't be surprised if that's something that we see change, or we see, you know, Rosas lean into the mid range a little bit more, and kind of allow guys to play their games and be their most efficient. Because, you know, what's the most efficient on, you know, paper in a spreadsheet as a blanket for everybody isn't where I'm the most efficient, or where you're the most efficient, or where D'Lo's the most efficient, or Cat or Ant. So, I mean, achieving maximum efficiency there is like getting guys in spots where they're comfortable. And I think analytics have always proven that it doesn't matter where on the floor that is, as long as you can be efficient at that spot. And I think with Rosas, yeah, some of that kind of got lost in, you know, the banishment of the mid-range and almost wrecking Culver, in the sense that, like, they didn't let him play his game at all. It was like, you got to play this way and you can't play this way. so you're not going to play. Like, it's just, I think that's like, I don't think you're going to see something like that happen again.
And one of the things that I think they were already taking a step towards to slow the pace of the entire game and therefore slow the pace of their offense specifically is transition defense. I think if you can get other teams to play in the half court more often, you can stop it from being just an up and back game all game. And how many times have we seen those games where it's just end to end all night and the Timberwolves are scoring 125 and the other team scoring 135? Like, that starts with transition defense and not letting the game be an under 10-second shot clock kind of game. I think that Finch has obviously gone on record multiple times and spoken about how transition defense is a key to them. And then Elson Turner kind of came in and he made that point as well, that transition defense needs to be the top priority. I think that's really important. And the other thing is, in terms of pace, is that this team can play at a slower pace because they can win in the half court offensively.
You have a half court mastermind.
Yeah, they have Finch loves to run sets and to just put people in places that work in the half court. And then you have the pieces as well. Like, Anthony Edwards, you obviously want him getting up and back in transition, but very good at getting to the rim in the half court. Carlton Towns is one of the best half court players in the league. Like, all of his points are coming in the half court pretty much. And then you have guys like D'Angelo Russell, who, again, like, he's good if he can get out in transition and make plays for others, but most of his scoring now is going to come from the half court. And the same goes for Malik Beasley. If you can get him going in half court sets as kind of like pressure valve, you know, relief valve shooter, like, all of that, I think, will work in Gupta's favor, because I think that he will want to come in and change the status quo. I don't think he'll want to shift the whole organization into something else, but just come in and tweak the things that Rosas was so strict on. I wonder how much, first of all, this means in terms of the power forward position. Like, is there a chance that now a big guy is more available to come in and play a two big or a semi two big kind of lineup? And even if that's Naz Reid, like, will Naz Reid get more minutes as the power forward or as the center next to Towns this season, just due to not having the pressure from the higher ups to play small and fast and have lots of shooting on the floor and be able to run guys off the court? I wonder about that, and then I wonder about D'Angelo Russell and how he's viewed. Maybe this might be the most intriguing thing to me is, like, I wonder what, and we don't know, we're not a fly on the wall, but I wonder what Gupta thinks of D'Angelo Russell the way that the rest of the front office, or that Rosas thought. Because Rosas absolutely adored Russell, like, and they didn't want to move him for Simmons. I'm sure they would have if the chance came up, but, like, Russell was the star next to Towns. I wonder if Gupta thinks that as well. Like, or does Gupta think in that analytics sense? And when you look at the analytics and you look at the metrics that are available, like, D'Angelo Russell is not a star. And in many cases, and we're both D'Angelo Russell believers, I think, but he's not the guy that wins you games on the spreadsheet. And I wonder if he just becomes a little bit more available or if they're a little bit more flexible in terms of how they view him, and whether Anthony Edwards, probably rightly so, just takes over that mantle as the second piece. Like, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, that one surprised me. And I mean, I think Anthony Edwards will be the second piece. I don't think there's any doubting that. I mean, I think it was fairly evident that he was, even when D'Lo came back and was fully healthy. I think D'Lo being able to really pick his spots, kind of like based on how the defense reacts to playing Ant and Cat, I think is really good. Because, like, D'Lo is a really high-level scorer. Like, when he gets to his spots and he can consistently get open looks, like, he's going to score and he's going to do it efficiently for the most part. And so I think that you'll see a more optimized version of D'Angelo Russell in the offense if he is on the team. But, you know, I wouldn't shock me at all if like you referenced it, a lot of that, D'Angelo Russell smoke in terms of how high they are on him and how much they want to keep him, you know, really stems from Rosas. And it wouldn't surprise me one bit if Gupta, who was in Philadelphia when they drafted Ben Simmons number one overall, is much higher on, you know, is much higher on Simmons relative to Russell, and feels that Russell is a fair price to pay if that's what it means to get Ben Simmons. I personally think it's a fair price to pay. I think most people who have actually seen Ben Simmons play basketball, and not just seen him play like in one game or two games of the Eastern Conference Final, he was still really good in the playoffs last year. You know, I don't think it's, I mean, I don't know how it's defensible to say you'd rather have D'Angelo Russell than Ben Simmons. Let's just break it down. Ben Simmons is the best defensive player in the NBA. D'Lo isn't even in the top 25 in terms of best offensive players in the NBA. And he's one of the worst 25 defensive players in the NBA. And Ben Simmons is an above average to good to great offensive player. And without even shooting, he's that impactful offensively. So, I mean, when you just look at it in that context, like, it's tough to really defend D'Lo as like D'Lo being the sticking point in that trade. Like, yeah, obviously in like a great world, like great perfect world, does D'Lo, Cat, Simmons, Ant sound awesome? Yeah, it does. But when you have to pay Ant his max contract in 3 years, like, and you also have to worry about Russell only having 2 years left on his contract, like, you'd have to trade Russell anyways. Why not just bite the bullet and trade him now? And potentially try and hold on to like a Jaden McDaniels if you can trade like three first round picks, or, you know, or hold on to like a couple extra first round picks if the only other person that you'd have to put in there would be like Jake Lehman and Jaden McDaniels. You know, then you can keep Malik Beasley and Torian Prince and Patrick Beverley, who still work as great salary fillers, especially Beasley, if things don't work out. You know, the way that you wanted it to, and you want to make another move. So, you know, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all if D'Lo becomes less of a sticking point now. And yeah, I mean, you know, I think we've both been operating in this holding pattern of like, we expect Simmons not to get traded here. And I think with D'Lo, it's good either way, because like, I think he'll be a much better optimized, you know, much more optimized version of himself offensively, especially if he stays here, and we'll get the best of D'Angelo Russell we've seen in the Timberwolves uniform. And if he goes, that means you're getting Ben Simmons.
The problem so with D'Lo is that he's even an optimized version of himself isn't worth $30 million. Like, that is the problem with it. If he was getting paid $20 million, he'd be an absolutely fine player to have on any team, and I'm sure Philly would be more inclined to take him, but he's just not worth the max contract, and that's, I think, where Gupta and Rosas maybe differ, is that Gupta sees that contract can tank a player's value, whereas Rosas was just so steadfast in his belief of Russell that no matter what, he was going to try and convince, if he wasn't going to convince the rest of the league that he was a star, and that he was a max contract, second best player on a good team kind of guy, like, he was going to convince himself. And I think he had convinced himself. And I think that he was trying to, you know, blow as much smoke up D'Angelo Russell's ass as he could, just to get that standing around the lead that he had in Rosas' own mind. And I'd be shocked I won't be shocked if Russell's here to begin with. I won't even be surprised. I think that is very much the likely scenario, that both Russell is on the Timberwolves and that Ben Simmons isn't on the Timberwolves to start the season, or maybe, you know, completely. But I'd be shocked if Russell doesn't now become kind of a priority on Gupta's list of things that need to be sorted out fairly quickly. That doesn't mean this season, but it means that Russell isn't the star player that's going to take you to a championship. He's a guy that eventually needs to be, like, his situation needs to be figured out, whether that's trade him, whether that's, you know, see out the contract and let him go, see out the contract and re-sign him to a smaller deal. Like, all those options are there, but I think that's now a priority to at least keep it on the whiteboard and something that needs to be done. Whereas Rosas, I think, was just so enamored with Russell that it kind of didn't matter what he was in reality. It was all about what he was in Rosas's mind. And that was always kind of something that I guess we knew and didn't really talk about that much because it was just what it was. But now that you hear all this other shit about Rosas and it all comes to the light of day, it makes sense that he was like this about Russell because it seemed like he was like this about everything in the organization that he believed.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's also a bold assumption to just like assume that Philadelphia wants D'Angelo Russell to begin with. Like,
yeah.
Do you want to pay $73 million in 1 year to Tobias Harris? I know I sure as hell don't. Or excuse me, $73 million to Tobias Harris and D'Angelo Russell. Like, I know I should.
Yeah, I wouldn't pay $73 just to Tobias.
I mean, it's late here. It's 10:30. Yeah, I mean, no, I know that I wouldn't want to do that. And you know, like we've heard, I think, like, you know, when you think about all these different trade machinations, like, you know, like everybody wants to try and find like a one-to-one match with like these two teams. And is it possible? Yes. Are there things that could make it work for both sides? Yes. But the reality of the situation is any Simmons trade that gets done is going to be a three team deal. And, or more. I mean, who knows? Maybe, you know, Gupta just goes bananas and has a bonkers trade like we saw at the trade deadline a couple of years ago.
Well, he's the one. He's the one doing the legwork on these trades.
Oh, he for sure.
He's always been doing the legwork. And when you read in this Athletic article by John and by Shams that like agents and executives and you know people around the league were fed up with Rosas' tactics because it was bleeding through to his conversations with them, with executives and with other players. Like it makes sense why Minnesota can't get these deals across the line, or haven't been. And that's partly to do with other things, including
or across
Minnesota's market.
Or across the line without giving up way more than they should.
Right. And it makes sense why they haven't used the fucking mid-level exception in 3 years. Because, like, this stuff gets around. And when... If the undercurrent around the league is that Rosas is a little bit of a nutcase, and he's kind of difficult to deal with, like... Players know that. If players are choosing between the exact same mid-level exception salary between you know, Phoenix and Minnesota, they're going to choose Phoenix, and not just because Phoenix wins, but because like it seems like a more steady organization. Phoenix might not be a good example because they also have a kind of weird owner and stuff, but like you get what I mean. It's just that like all of these little things that we brush to the side and that we explained away with other things make a lot more sense right now that it kind of was just a lot of it was Rosas and the way he was operating.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I said too, like, I think, you know, it's a little bit of addition by subtraction, I think. If not a lot of addition by subtraction, potentially now that we know a lot more about, you know, what's gone on behind the scenes. You know, I think it's going to be really interesting to see, like, how much leeway is the front office going to give Gupta? Like, are they going to be cool with Gupta putting his nuts on the table, so to speak, and saying, hey, like walks into Glenn's office and is like, and gets a conference call with him and Mark Lurie and is like, hey, I can get Ben Simmons right now in one phone call for this, this, and this. Are we doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting if they let him even get to that point. Like, you know, Doogie Wolfson has said that, you know, this is a legitimate audition. Like, they're going to give him the space to do his thing. Like, it's pretty awkward, I think, for a guy like him to be in that spot and make a humongous, you know, franchise decision that could ultimately impact not just Cat's prime, but also Ant's prime. And like, you're mortgaging both of those things in a sense, potentially to trade for Ben Simmons. And it's going to be really fascinating to me how much the front office, or excuse me, how much the ownership group kind of allows Goop to cook. I mean, if it were me, I would say, let the chef cook. Like, when the chef is in the kitchen, like, let him cook and get out of his way. And that's what I hope happens. I mean, could you imagine being in his shoes right now? I mean, not obviously just for like strictly in the Simmons sense.
Yeah. I lean less towards them getting Simmons now, not because I think that they don't want him as much or that Gupta doesn't have the capabilities and the relationships around the league to get him, but just because of what you said, like, to go and move 3 or 4 first-round picks, or to move, you know, a really intriguing guy coming off his rookie contract, like, coming off his rookie year, sorry. Like, it takes a lot of nuts to go and do that when you're in an interim position. Like, and if it doesn't work, and to be fair, I don't know how it would not work immediately. Like, from this season, it feels like Simmons couldn't get any worse, and I don't think he's like the Timberwolves are going to come out with Simmons and be worse than the 23 win team they were last season. Like, it's almost a win-win. It's almost a no-loss situation if you can acquire Simmons at all. But if the worst happened, not only does he not get the job with Minnesota, but his resume is tainted forever, a resume that doesn't even have a lead executive role on it yet. Like, it's not like he's a guy who's been through these other stops and had really good stops in some places. He hasn't done so well, and you know, he'll get another job eventually. Like, if you implode a Timberwolves franchise that is bordering on implosion by itself already, like, that's a real stain on your resume, man. So, like, that's why I think maybe that works the other way. Maybe he thinks, like, this franchise is going to implode if I don't make the big move. But I don't know. I just think it takes a lot of cojones to go and move multiple future assets when you might not be in a job in 3 months. Like, when your job isn't even cemented yet.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? And I think, you know, I think the ownership group's belief in him will be rooted in, you know, what plays out over the next week. I mean, Sam Amico is, he works for Clay Travis and OutKick. So that, right off the bat, tells you that he's probably a bit of a lunatic. And, you know, a lot of people have said that he's not a very reliable source. But, I mean, he did say today that, you know, he expects that Ben Simmons will be traded in the next week. As we sit here right now, it's 10:40 Central Time on Thursday night on September, 23rd. So who knows? That would put it at like the end of day 3 of Sixers camp. Same thing in Minnesota. I find it hard to believe that the 76ers don't try and drag this thing out to at least the first game of the regular season. But I could be wrong. Yeah, I mean, it's just going to, I mean, we'll have an answer, I think, in the next like 2 weeks. With kind of, like, let me say this. I think we'll have a strong update on the Ben Simmons situation in the next 2 weeks. And I think, obviously, like, if it's a trade, then we'll know about Gupta. And if it's not a trade, then, you know, then maybe it's just more of a waiting game.
Yeah. Before I let you go, you've given me plenty of time for late over there, and I know you just got off another podcast just doing the media rounds at the moment, like the superstar that you are. How much do you read into the Cat tweet, and like, what's your opinion on the Cat tweet? That's probably the one thing that, I guess, like, it was like a little tremor around the fan base when Rosas got sacked, and then when Cat piled on top of it with the WTF tweet that felt like a full-blown fucking earthquake, you know? Like, it felt like the walls were caving in at that stage. So, like, what do you make of it at the time? What do you make of it now? Like, does it worry you? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there were some things that I knew pretty shortly after, you know, Rosas's firing was announced. When Kat tweeted what he said...
Sorry, just to cut you off, when did he tweet? I was asleep, obviously I'm in Australia, so I'm asleep through all of this. I woke up at 6 a.m. to go to work, and I got the whole news cycle all at once. Like, did Kat tweet that immediately after Durst? Like, or was it...
So Carl tweeted WTF at 2:22, and Sham Sharania tweeted that Gerson Rosas was being relieved of his duties at 2:09.
So immediately.
It was virtually immediately. So I mean, I was pretty shocked that Kat hadn't known, even despite, you know, a few tidbits that I had, just because I, you know, like Glenn Taylor drove up from Mankato that morning. Like, I would have thought that Glenn Taylor, like, on the way, maybe would have been like, hey, Kat, I'm on the way up to Minnesota right now. Things are kind of fucked up. Here's what happened. This is what's going to happen. You know,
so
like,
expecting Glenn Taylor to do the competent thing was where you went wrong there.
I mean, I don't read too much into it. You know, Doogie Wolfson tweeted, I don't know if it was today or last night, it's all blurred together for me, that it doesn't impact Kat whatsoever. And that, you know, it, just looking at how Kat handled the Saunders firing with such grace, he didn't have the same relationship with Rosas that he had with the Saunders family, and especially Ryan. You know, I mean, Kat is legitimately about family, and he's proven that time and time again. And, you know, I think Kat understands. There's no way he doesn't.
I think if he went back in time after he learned the full extent of what happened, and I'm sure he still would have wanted to be kept in the loop. I think it's bizarre that he wasn't kept in the loop, and maybe even bizarre that he didn't know, you know, that there was some sort of discontent to begin with. But I think if he had his time back, he probably wouldn't tweet that if he knew the circumstances. Because, like you said, like, Kat is an upstanding guy and a family guy and a loyal guy to both the Timberwolves and to his relationships outside of the Timberwolves. So I think he would probably want that back. I don't think he would still be impressed by the news or the fact that he wasn't told before it, you know, hit his Twitter screen. But yeah, I think the Kat trade rumors and, you know, Warriors fans trying to get us to take back Andrew Wiggins, that's all a bit premature. I don't think Karl-Anthony Towns is asking for a trade right now.
Yeah, no, not at all. And the other thing too that I think about it is, like, if John Krasinski or Britt or Dane or Chris, Jace, whoever, Doogie, knew about just that this front office was littered with tension, discord, distrust, you know, you name it, there is no way that the most important person at 600 Hennepin Avenue didn't know about it and didn't know, yeah, like, multiple sides of the story and didn't know and wasn't able to make his own read on the situation based on the information that he had been presented from, you know, any other members of the front office, the business office, or whomever it is that he has relationships with and would talk to on a consistent basis. You know what I mean? So
maybe the what the fuck was just at the news that he heard. Not at Gerson Rosas getting fired.
Yeah, just like, what the fuck is going on? Like, what? Why?
Yeah, like, or just like, what the fuck are you doing, Gerson?
Was it a why the fuck? Not a what the fuck. Was it a why the fuck?
Was it a who the fuck?
Yeah, and so I just wanted to add in one more thing just before we go. Dan Devine is a fantastic writer for TheRinger.com.
Absolutely.
Wrote a piece on you know, Gerson Rose is being dismissed today on Thursday, and I would strongly encourage everybody to go check it out. But and I tweeted this out, so if you want to read along as you know, as I'm reading this, go for it. My Twitter handle is at JRBR or at JRBorman13. So JRBORMAN13. So Dan Devine had just a perfect dismount from this article that he wrote. He says here, "We'll all learn together whether Gupta is the right person for the job, but the former Daryl Morey lieutenant is a widely respected exec who came to prominence as the developer of ESPN's trade machine, lent a helping hand in many of Sam Hinkie's deals during his days with the Sixers, and was in the running for the Kings job that went to Monty McNair last offseason. He also reportedly believes, quote, in Finch as the coach the team needs, end quote, suggesting that should he stay in charge for a bit, there won't be yet another midstream coaching change. Give Finch a full complement of healthy wolves for the first time in years, let a new voice lead the organization and hopefully drain out some of the bad blood that's been pooling, and see where the chips fall in the ongoing absurdity that is the standoff between Simmons and the Sixers. And this could be less the continuation of a vicious cycle of bullshit and, at long last, the start of something better. You'd be forgiven for viewing that possibility skeptically, given how things have tended to shake out in Minnesota over the past couple of decades. At this point, though, it's what towns, the Wolves, and their fans have to hang their hats on. Because without it, I mean, what the fuck, right? Because well, without it, I mean, just... what the fuck, right, is just a perfect, perfect way to ride off into the sunset of that article. I mean...
instead of listening to this podcast, you probably could have just read that last two paragraphs and save yourself 45 minutes. Like, because no,
I mean, but
that's
at least...
kind of what we're... what we're getting at here is that, like, this is shit and weird, and it's normal for you to think that the Timberwolves dysfunction is just the Timberwolves thing, and fuck it, you know, I agree with that. Like, we're the ones who, we live it more than most, I think. Like, we don't get to switch off and stop worrying about this team. And
born
like,
into
like
it, molded
who,
by it.
Yeah, but, you know, getting rid of shitty people who are doing shitty things is a good thing no matter what time it is. And that's what I'm going to... That's, you know, the overarching kind of storyline for me is that if Gerson Rosas was doing shitty things and was cheating on his wife in public and was doing all the messy stuff that you've probably heard about by now, it's like getting rid of that guy is a good thing. And I don't want to hear anything else because as long as the team's there, as long as Finch is there, as long as Kat... has bought in, as long as his team can stay healthy, I'm just as excited as I was. This is just a weird little Timberwolvesy blip on the radar for me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I just hope that it doesn't influence the way that they allow Sachin Gupta to work. You know, he's damn smart. He's got the resume of somebody that would be a coveted person to run front office. You know, and for me, I really hope that they don't have training wheels on him, because he's been on, you know, all as many sides of the negotiation table in a trade as you can possibly be on. And he's probably hatched a million different trade possibilities, gone through that process, successfully made a trade, understood the give, the take, the negotiations, all of it. And for me, that's ultimately gonna decide my confidence in the future of the franchise. If there's something that comes out that is a strong support of Sachin Gupta in terms of letting him work, I'm going to be very, very encouraged. I'd imagine that comes more from Mark Laurie than it does from Glenn Taylor, given that, you know, he's going to be the full-time guy in 2 years. And like you said, like 2 years is an incredibly short time as an executive. And that's all Gerson Rose has got. And you know, Mark Laurie is going to be the guy that ultimately decides who to bring in, because 2 years from now, hopefully that executive is still around and it'll be around for a long time. And it's not often you get an opportunity to audition like this if you want to be somebody like Mark Laurie is, who's all about VCP, vision, capital, and people. And if you're, and if you have a vision and Sachin Gupta shares that vision, you obviously have the capital and in terms of the ammo to make a Simmons trade. And if you feel like you've got the right people in place with Gupta and Chris Finch and Kat and Ant, then just say, fuck it. We ball. Like,
I'm going to leave it at that.
My mindset is fuck them, we ball. And, yeah, you know, I'm very excited for what Gupta can do. He has more than earned the opportunity to be where he is. And I hope that folks, don't lose sight of the humanity of this, how it's affected, 5 kids, has changed their lives forever. The 2 spouses that were involved, on the outside of it. And 2, that like you look at all the people in the Timberwolves organization that you have put in an awkward spot, whose lives have been incredibly difficult day to day, dealing with all the shit that's come from it. It's time to turn a new leaf. And like you said, it's a good thing. The organization got rid of 2 people who, by accounts that are out there now, were objectively not good people. And and do with that as you will. But I think the organization has 3 really fantastic people, and Mark Laurie, Sachin Gupta, and Chris Finch. Call it 5 if you enjoy Kat and Anthony Edwards. I know I sure do. And I'm excited to see what those 5 come up with in the next few weeks, because there's no time to wallow in this bullshit. There's not. Media day is Monday. Training camp starts Tuesday. First preseason game is in 2 weeks. There's no time to wallow in it. It's time to get back to work. Time to get back to basketball. Fuck 'em, we ball.
Before we go, give us a plug for whatever's coming up on Kane of Supers, and what have you got in store for us?
Yeah, so right now, you know, I've been working on the Ben Simmons piece. So that's something that it will not get dropped until
it's an annual piece these days. Annual Ben Simmons bonanza.
So I'm working on a piece that would drop if he were to get traded here. If he doesn't get traded here, I'm not going to drop it. So I'm working on that a little bit, or I've worked on that this week. But yeah, after I hang up this pod, this will be the last Timberwolves thing I do, probably until either Simmons is traded or the Lynx season is over. So once the season starts, you know, it'll just be normal, you know, column coverage for me. But in the meantime, I'll be breaking down the Lynx matchup with whomever they end up playing on Sunday in the quarterfinals of the WNBA playoffs. Right now, if things hold, it looks like that could be the New York Liberty, who they've already beaten at Target Center twice in the last month, and done so handily. So I'll be breaking down that matchup. That should drop, I would think, on Sunday, if not Saturday. After that, you know, it'll just be general Lynx coverage. You know, hopefully they keep going all the way through to the WNBA finals and bring home title number 5. But until that point, it's going to be Lynx coverage from me at Canis. And then after that, I'm hoping to get into writing, you know, 1, if not 2 things a week for Canis on the Wolves side. So I'm very excited for the Lynx playoffs. But I'm excited too to have Wolves basketball back in the fold as well.
Beautiful. So you can head over to Tana Supers, as you probably know, to check that out. Head over to houseandgrowls.substack.com to check out my work. I've been writing about Rosas and the good and the bad and all that ugly shit that's going on for the last few hours, and I'll have that out, I'm sure, by the time anyone's listening to this. So head over, subscribe, get newsletters, get it in your email box, all that good shit. Jack, thank you for coming on. Thank you for always giving up an hour of your time for me. And you know, we'll do this again when the Wolves season starts up and when we get some more interesting little tidbits.
Anytime, my brother. Pleasure is all mine, and hopefully the next time we speak, we'll have some damn good Anthony Edwards Anthony Edwards content to break down. So I'm looking forward to it, and blown away by everything you've accomplished and you've done since you spread your wings and flown the coop, and I get smarter every day from reading your stuff. So I can't wait to see what type of heat you bring once we have some live basketball in store for you. So
yeah, I'm running out of content, so I need the basketball to start.
And shout out,
I'm scraping
and shout out to vaccines in Australia finally getting down there.
Yes.
So hopefully you guys can get back to normal life in some short order here.
I'm half jabbed, so that's good. I'll get my second in about a month. So yes, back to normal. I'll be back in the States hopefully soon, and you know, we'll go from there. So yeah, thanks, man, and everyone else. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you guys next week.